Hello, everyone. Welcome to Parkside Today. I'm John Melke. It's my pleasure to welcome Jeff Willis, the executive chef here at UW Parkside. Jeff is a graduate of Racine's Horlick High School, and his impressive food service resume includes experiences at the Waterfront Restaurant in Burlington, BJ Wentker's in Burlington, UW Whitewater, and Buca di Beppo. Did I pronounce Buca di Beppo?
Yep,
pretty close.
Buca di Beppo. Yep.
Good. I got that one right. As UW Parkside's executive chef, Jeff is responsible for feeding more than 1,000 students, faculty, and staff each day and accommodating the many special events that take place on campus. Jeff, welcome to Parkside Today.
Thanks. I'm glad to be here.
So the first thing for me is I have a hard time sometimes figuring out how to get the steak done at the same time the baked potato is done and then the salad is ready. How in the world do you ever manage to coordinate 1,000 people eating here on campus and doing that without like everything being completely out of whack?
So basically what I do is I look at cook times at any given product that we're doing for that day. I do have recipes that I generate for each of my cooks, so that way each of them know about how much prep time goes into which item, followed with how much cook time goes into each item as well. And then what I try to do is, obviously, I try to have everything set up, staged 15 minutes prior to the opening of service.
Okay. How, and in addition to the close to 1,000 people who are here on campus each day, faculty, staff, students that come in, you guys are doing wedding receptions and corporate meetings.
Sure.
And how do you balance just what if we call the regular dining services for faculty, staff, and students, how do you balance those special events when those things come at you as well?
So basically what I do is I take a look at my menu for that particular day, whatever day the event is. I take a look at what time my staff come in. If I need to adjust in and out times, I do it. I create job postings that some of my employees that might not work that day can sign for. And that's how I kind of offset it. And everybody really pulls together as a team here at Parkside. All of my cooks, all of my food service workers, they've all worked here for quite a long time. Mm-hmm. I mean, Joanne the baker's been here since 1974.
Yeah.
Just a couple years here on campus, right?
Yeah, just a little bit.
So, yeah, it's more like a family here, which is definitely something that I actually absolutely love about this campus.
And how do you, for the people that have been here on your team for quite a while, is it kind of like, okay, they've got an idea of what's expected of them each day? Or in your business too, do you get curveballs coming at you?
Oh yeah,
there's
definitely curveballs every day. There's at least something. But one thing that we do, open lines of communication. I keep my office door open. I'm on the floor. I'm talking with my staff. I'm finding out what their time frame looks like. If they're running behind, I'll jump in, give them a hand. If need be, I can shuffle staff over to them to get them caught back up. It's definitely, it's a dance you do back there, really. You're just trying to make sure that everything happens on time. Everything's coordinated properly and try to avoid any errors.
Sure. And you guys are really dependent on, it's not like some businesses where if a whole bunch of product comes in that you're using for your business and it can sit on the shelf for a while, you're really tied into much of the freshness, right?
It's a turn and burn industry. You have to get it in. You have to be able to utilize it. If it sits on the shelf too long, obviously it's perishable, so it goes into the garbage. So there's definitely a balance there in the forecasting part of it, where I have to look at my menu and decide, how much of this am I actually going to sell? And then based off of that, that's what I order for. So, you know, like today was we had Chicago dogs. So I forecasted that we would sell about 120 orders and I had a pan left at the end. So it's definitely, you have to be pretty accurate on how you order food because you have to maintain, you know, there's definitely, you don't want to run out of food.
Right.
But you don't want to have an overabundance either.
Right.
So it's definitely paying attention to what your customers are eating, paying attention to what they don't eat, and then ordering accordingly.
Right. And kind of throwing it back to the special events here on campus, what is it about those special events that you enjoy most? I'm assuming you enjoy something about them.
It's definitely the creativity side of it. I get to step out of the cycle manual world and really let my wings spread. Mm-hmm. And it's teaching the staff, too. I mean, one of my favorite parts about it is having a staff member that hasn't made a particular thing before, and I get to teach them how to do it.
Oh, yeah.
So that's always really fun to me. And then seeing them, like, when it clicks, when they go, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's that aha moment that I really enjoy with them.
Sure, sure. What, how did you get into dining services, into the food industry? Where'd that genesis come from?
So my very first job, I breaded perch at a little restaurant in Racine called Anna Maria's Carryout.
Oh,
it was on Douglas Avenue. Her dad was the owner of Durango's Pizza.
Oh, okay.
But I worked there and I breaded perch and I got paid $2 an hour cash. It was the very, very first job I ever had. And I really liked it because I enjoyed seeing the look on the customers' faces when they would eat the food. And you could really see that they were happy with what they got.
Mm-hmm.
And so that made me happy to know that I had a part of that.
Yeah.
And then I worked at Hamsey's in Racine for a while as a child. Well, I should say as an adolescent.
Mm-hmm.
Child labor laws.
Gotta be careful. Yeah. I forgot how old I was. No, I remember. Yes. Yeah.
So yeah, it just my whole career has kind of been, it's always been around customer service, and I enjoy it because I enjoy the interaction. I enjoy bringing happiness to people.
Sure.
It's just, it makes you feel good.
Sure. So this, I'll call what we're doing here at UW Parkside a larger dining services setup. And yet some of your experience has been maybe more on the retail. Is that fair to call it that? Retail a little less institutional size?
Correct. So I did a lot of casual dining, casual fine dining, higher end fine dining. I worked for Bartolotta's in Milwaukee for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I worked at Pier 290 in Williams Bay, which was a Gage Marine.
Mm-hmm.
So I've went from a very small mom and pop shop.
Yeah.
Then I went to high volume fine dining, and then from high volume fine dining, I went to high volume dining, and then decided to come to higher ed and give it a go.
Interesting. What are some of the differences in each of those kind of scenarios that you just laid out there, and what were you able to take from each experience into the next chapter?
So definitely in the smaller scale fine dining restaurants, you have the ability to change your menu daily.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, so if something doesn't work, your reaction time to it is almost immediate.
Yeah.
If it doesn't work, you run it for a shift and then you go, okay, we're not going to do that anymore.
Yeah.
When you start getting into larger volume, well, now you can't really change the menu as often. So you have to be you're almost like a tactician when you write menus. You're going to write what works and what you know works.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to try to stick to that as closely as you can. And then once you get into like high volume food service, like mm-hmm. at a college setting,
mm-hmm.
it really puts you to the test, because at any given time, you know, we might have 9 stations going here,
right?
And I got to come up with 3 different recipes for each one of those stations. So each meal period is 27 recipes,
right?
Times 3 per day. And then you have to do that over a 4-week cycle.
Yeah. Yeah. How do you, given the fact that for here at Parkside with students, faculty, staff, the audience is pretty much the same each day.
Sure.
And how do you balance that you want to have some variety. You mm-hmm. don't want it to be the same thing each day. And you're also trying to make sure that you're offering nutritional, healthy alternatives. How do you balance that when you know it's kind of the same group each day that you're serving?
So what we do is I try to find the staples that I know they're going to eat.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, I can try to build on it. So I work closely with my dietitian. We come up with healthy choice alternatives. We definitely try to give as many healthy choice alternatives as we can. It is up to the student or customer to mm-hmm. choose the healthy item.
Yeah.
But we try to provide it.
Right.
We try to always make sure that there's always something out there. Like this semester in particular, we put vegetables on sizzles, and you know, just to try to increase the amount of vegetables that people are getting, the vegetable option. I'm going to try out some new stuff on the salad bar with grains and greens. So I'm hoping to bring some new stuff to the table there too and implement some more world flavor.
Yeah. But at the same time, some of the things I would think that people look at, we'll do the Taco Tuesday, right? That somebody's looking forward to, oh, it's Tuesday. And it's
that's
taco.
Me. I'm looking forward to Taco Tuesday.
I'm looking forward to Taco Tuesday. So you can't be switching up too
much. Right. So you have to keep the classics there. You have to keep the things that you know people want to eat, like the chicken tenders. I sell about 95 cases a week of chicken tenders.
Wow.
I think if I took them off the menu, people would probably revolt. Fairly certain.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I do. I will never touch chicken tenders because I know that's what students want. They want the chicken tenders. But I do try to provide healthier options for them as well.
Sure. And how, in talking about the smaller, the fine dining area to what you're doing now, how, even though you're in a larger setting, are you still able to do maybe some seasonal things, or do you source locally at all?
Yep. So we source locally. It's actually part of what our company does is we try to source as many items as we can locally.
Mm-hmm.
And I do. I'm still able to get creativity too with, like, you know, small plate events that we do for the weddings. The Chancellor events are always fun. So
sure. When you look at the, and you touched on it just a little bit ago when you were talking about the, you know, the planning and the managing that goes into what you're ordering so that you've got the right ingredients and it's not sitting too long, what is it about your responsibilities here at Parkside that maybe is most challenging and also maybe the most rewarding?
So definitely the most rewarding is seeing when the students are happy. Mm-hmm. When I can find a menu item that hasn't been ran on the menu before and I put it on and they're like, yeah, this is it. That is a really rewarding part of my job. Or when students come up to me and they say, hey, this meal was great. We really like this. That's what I'm in this for. It's to make people happy.
Mm-hmm.
I would say as far as challenging for me is trying to find what, basically how am I going to get the menu? How can I put as many things into the menu without driving the costs so far up that nobody can afford to eat here, right? That's always a challenge. You want to create variety. You want to have seasonality. Everything. You want the student to be able to come in here and have an experience. You always have to remember they're students. Like, you have to keep the cost down.
Sure.
So yeah. That is probably the most challenging thing to do.
Yeah. Do you find yourself when you're trying to balance that, the management and planning, do you get to cook as much as you want to?
No, I don't think any chef that's in a high volume setting like this gets to cook as much as they want to because of everything else that goes into it. But when I do get to cook, I always have a really good time doing it.
Yeah. Is it hard to give that up? I mean, do you see like some members of your team cooking, you think, oh, I want to get my
constantly.
Fingers in there and do that
constantly. Yeah, you miss it.
Mm-hmm.
You end up missing it a little bit. But yeah, I love my job. This is great. Everything about it.
Yeah. Tell me some of the differences between here at Parkside when you're, when you're preparing the usual crowd of students, faculty, staff during the week, some of the differences between the breakfast meal, the lunch meal, the dinner meal. How does your job change with each of those, with those three?
So on the breakfast side of it, you mean as far as like the food production?
Yeah, food production or the number of staff you have to have in. Or,
oh, sure.
You know, does it?
Well, breakfast is always a slower meal period, so I don't need quite as many staff out front. However, the back, the main kitchen is full of people because we're getting ready for lunch.
Okay.
So and it takes quite a while to get ready for a meal. There's about 4 hours of prep that goes into each meal. So I mean, when you look at that and you have 50 people working and 4 hours times 50, so each meal is about 200 hours worth of prep time.
Wow.
So there's definitely a lot that goes into it. But breakfast is more, to be more specific, breakfast is more of your made-to-order. So he's out there and he's making the sandwiches kind of almost as they come in. You know, he's only got a few made. Mm-hmm. And he does that because your breakfast food, it will, you know, eggs don't hold for very long.
Yeah.
So you have to keep it fresh. And it's the same thing with lunchtime. So what you see out front is we might have a pan of food out there, but what you don't see is there's a guy in the back that is monitoring how much food that we're using.
Mm-hmm.
And he's firing it in the back as we go. So there's always batch cooking that's going on. There's always somebody behind the scenes that you're not seeing that's back there really sweating it out, and he's getting the food ready and putting it into the pass-through for you.
Yeah, yeah. How because each UW campus is doing kind of the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's the dining services at each of those. Do you interact with your colleagues at other campuses?
Oh,
do you
sure.
guys exchange ideas on what's working, what's not working?
Oh, sure, yeah. Well, you know, I was at Whitewater before I came back here, so definitely I still talk to most of them on a daily basis, just if I'm having a hard time with something or if they can't figure something out.
Mm-hmm.
It's back and forth. You know, we're emailing, we're trying to, you know, figure out a solution to a problem, because in the end, that's what we're all here doing.
Sure, sure.
We're all just trying to get everybody fed.
Right, right. So let's take Jeff out of the kitchen for a little bit. Let's take him out of Parkside for a little bit. And let's take Jeff now becomes the, are you more of a, I'm going to stay at home, I'm going to do some cooking here in my kitchen and do that, versus I'm going out to eat someplace?
Yeah, no, definitely. I definitely cook at home quite a bit. Yeah, I have two kids too, so, and I don't like them eating much fast food.
Mm-hmm.
So I try to make them pretty substantial meals at home.
Yeah.
I think my daycare actually gets upset with me because I pack such big lunches for them.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they're like, you don't have to send that much food. I'm like, no, I do.
Yeah. So. And what are some of your favorite, what's Jeff's favorite when he's got time to whip something up in the house?
So, well, yesterday I made beef pot roast for me and the kids, which was, uh-huh. that was very good. I enjoy making lasagna at the house for the kids. We'll do, you know, I'll make homemade pizzas for them.
Mm-hmm.
And I let them get in on it. So they make pizzas with me, and my son enjoys cooking. So
yeah,
I have a lot of fun doing that with him.
Yeah. Do you get any flack at home? Like they're going, geez, Dad, you know, what are you doing?
No,
here?
They just trash my kitchen and and then go watch Curious George, you know?
Yeah. 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 So when you do go out, what is it hard to, as an executive chef, to kind of just go enjoy a meal, or do you find yourself like getting into it and critiquing and thinking about, oh, what are they doing back there?
In certain aspects. So I guess it depends on where I'm dining. If I'm at a standard diner or, you know, mom and pop restaurant,
yeah,
I'm probably not going to be very critical of the food. And overall, I enjoy food. I mean, I don't get to be my size without enjoying food, but
yeah.
Definitely, I'm not too picky. But if I do go to a high-end restaurant, I will be exceptionally critical, especially if I'm paying $50 a plate or something.
Sure.
But I don't complain. I won't complain about it. I just know not to go there.
Yeah. Yeah.
So.
Yeah. And how much of the high end, the smaller restaurant where they're doing more of the individual, how much variety, or maybe the word, maybe I'm looking for variance, is there in terms of when you're working with a supplier, as far as like the grade of meats, the grade of different things coming in? Is it a pretty wide variety of things that restaurants have an option for?
Yeah, you can pick grades of meats anywhere from select up to prime. I mean, it's really, it's a pretty broad thing.
Mm-hmm.
You can tell the difference definitely once you get, if you've had a bad steak,
yeah,
that's tough. Or has low marbleization in it, and then you have one that has high marbleization, and it's obviously more tender. You can definitely, if you pay attention, tell the difference in the grade.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So.
And I'm going to sound like an old guy here, but I am an old guy, so that's okay. with the Google machine, the worldwide internet.
Oh yeah,
you know, you can go on and look for a gazillion recipes in no time at all.
Oh right? Yeah.
And so now in my kitchen, I not only am the proud owner of an Instant Pot, have one of those, I also have the sous vide
stick.
Oh, sure.
So now I've got to jump on the internet to go, well, how do I use this, and where can I find different
recipes?
Do you
have the programmable one with the app so you can control it?
Yes, I haven't done the. My wife has done. What did we do? We did pork chops and something else.
Then you get the freezer bag, the whole nine.
Yeah, yeah, and you know, and I'm. I was to the point where I was going, I'm never buying a boneless pork chop again for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
Because no matter what I did to it, it seemed like I just couldn't get it to where it wasn't just, I'm just eating it because it's there.
Well, boneless pork chop is a pork loin.
Yeah, yeah, and the pork loin. So here comes the boneless pork chop, and it goes in the Ziploc bag and into the sous vide, and it's like, that was pretty good.
Money every time.
Yeah. Yeah. So where is that something that's been done for a while, or is it just a new way of?
It's just a new way. I think it's become, you know, everything trends.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, like it's just like dieting, you know, the different ways of making food kind of evolves.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you see is that in action, really. I mean, technology catches up, and then they go, we can do that, but we can do it controlled now.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
They've figured out a better way to do it, and that's how they do it.
Right. Yeah. The one that that Patty said I couldn't do, so I have to do this sometime when she's not there, is they had the like the chuck roast.
Oh, sure.
Recipe for sous vide, and they're going, leave it in there for like 24 hours.
Yeah.
And she said, you are not putting that in there for 24 hours. And I thought, well, it's on the internet. You know, of course you can do it, but. It looks like it would be interesting to try that.
Yeah, and it's a controlled temperature. I mean, once you set it, it's pretty much controlled. You just have to make sure you don't overcrowd it, or
yeah,
it's not too big for the sous vide to handle.
Right, so, right. Yeah. Now, as a chef here, executive chef here at UW Parkside, a wide range of audiences come in from again back to the faculty, staff, students each day to the wedding receptions, to corporate meetings. And Parkside has also, each year, has the Northwestern football team.
Yep.
Comes in for their fall, we'll call it summer fall practice, right? That's got to be a whole different way or what they're looking for in their nutrition, is it?
Yeah, so they're very stringent. Their dietitians actually review our menus. Ooh. Before we even finalize. And so it usually takes us about 2 months worth of meetings and conferences before we actually finalize the menu for those guys.
Mm.
And then once it's finalized, they eat four times a day with on-the-field snacks. So we're delivering snacks onto the field.
Mm-hmm.
They're eating four times a day. It is a massive amount of food. So typically you got about 140 guys,
mm-hmm.
and they eat like they're 300.
Yeah.
Per meal.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's crazy. They're here for about 10 days, and the amount of food, if I gave you a dollar amount, you would be shocked.
Yeah. No, I when I think about the amount of energy that they're burning up,
mm-hmm.
during their practice, and well, you got to replenish that, right? You
got
to use that. What from their dietitian standpoint, what are they most interested in? Is it like high proteins? Is it a mix?
Yeah, so they do a lot of high protein, low carb. So they're using brown rice. They don't want the pastas.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a lot of brown rice. It's a lot of whole grain. It is definitely a ton of protein.
Yeah.
And then the yogurt. They love yogurt. They want it.
Wow.
And then obviously hydration.
Mm-hmm.
So it's... They want fruits, they want smoothies, they want, you know, tons of water and Gatorade on the field.
Mm-hmm.
And fruit, whole fruit. They just love it. I mean, they eat so much food. And chicken. They like grilled chicken too.
Yeah. Yeah. And how does that compare with when Parkside athletic teams do they also have different dietary requirements for some of the teams during their practice time?
Yeah, we see a lot of whole muscle and whole grain from those guys as well.
Mm-hmm.
which we accommodate for them, and a lot of steamed vegetables.
Okay. So when I come to an event here at Parkside and I'm sitting in the ballroom and there's 250 or 300 of my closest friends, and out comes the filet, and as I'm looking around the table,
all the fillets look great, all the fillets are tasty. How in the world do you do that? How do you get
those fillets actually?
Wow.
I get them in an entire tenderloin. Mm-hmm. And once I get the tenderloin, I trim it, remove the silver skin, remove the head,
mm-hmm.
Take the tail off, and then I'm chopping just literally barrel cuts.
Mm-hmm.
Once I've got the barrel cuts done, I'll lay them out, let them come up to room temperature. And then once they're at room temperature, that's when I season them.
Okay.
And allow that to sit in there, chill them back down. Then I get the grill going. I'll mark them off on each side, put them back onto another pan, and that's where I use my AltoSham. The AltoSham is kind of like an oven, but not really. So basically what happens is it has a series of wires inside of it that wrap around it, and it's insulated.
Okay.
So those wires will actually heat up to whatever temperature you set it to, and it will hold that. So it is a radiant heat. It heats from all four sides.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So that entire thing is being heated from all sides at the same time. And that's where you can really, it cooks super evenly. Yeah. And then once I probe it and I get it to the temperature that I want it to be at, I can hold it there.
Oh, okay. So it's kind of like the because now the sous vide is like my big thing.
It's almost like it's that. Almost different like technique, that. Yeah. Different technique, but yeah, same kind of concept. So it's a very controlled heat, and you can set it to whatever you want and keep it there.
Right. And are you using that same technique for whether you're doing, let's say, a chicken breast, a steak, you're doing something like that?
It depends. Chicken breasts, I don't normally do that way, just because they dry out so fast. So with chicken breast, it's right before you serve it, just get it on the grill, get it done, and get it out just so it stays moist.
Mm-hmm.
But your prime ribs, I'm doing that way. Most of your red meat steaks, I'm doing that way.
Mm-hmm.
It just seems to hold better that way.
Yeah. Is there a difference in what, kind of looking at the wedding receptions and meetings and such, is there a difference in what people are looking for today than maybe 20 years ago, what they want to see?
Yeah, I think so. You're starting to see, especially with the allergens, you're starting to see a lot of people with food allergies. So we have definitely tried to gear a menu that is definitely allergens, not allergen free, but definitely geared towards people that can have it still without all the allergens in it. Just because you remove the allergens doesn't mean you're going to remove any flavor. I mean, you can do an allergen sensitive fajita, and I mean, it's not going to compromise the taste of the fajita.
Mm-hmm. What about on the vegetarian side? Do you see more people looking for a vegetarian option than
vegetarian
maybe?
And vegan? Vegan are definitely trending.
So what's the difference?
So the difference is there's actually a bunch of differences. Okay. So there's a pescatarian that can do the fish. You have a standard vegetarian that can do, they can still eat eggs. They can still eat butter. Okay. Mm-hmm. They're just not eating whole muscle animal.
Okay.
And then you get into the vegans where it's plant-based.
Mm.
So, but luckily, a lot of food companies have seen that as the trend.
Mm-hmm.
And they're starting to come out with products that are actually quite good and you can use in place of. So, like, there's a plant-based cream now, which is completely vegan.
Mm.
It does have soy. That's the trade-off, right? So are you vegan? Are you allergen sensitive? Because normally when you see vegan food, there is some kind of soy aspect to it. You'll see soy in a lot of vegan food. So okay. If you're vegan and you have a soy allergy, that's a rough one.
Yeah, yeah.
So... But, yeah, I mean, we are definitely – I'm always looking for new products to use because, like I've said, you know, it's all about making the customer happy. Even if it's something I wouldn't eat, I still will put it out just because I know somebody wants it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So. Right, right. And the world of serving university students, that keeps changing. You're offering them more more alternatives. If you can look in the crystal ball, what does that look like a few years from now? How is our taste maybe evolving or changing?
I think you're definitely going to see some of the trends that I'm seeing now is a lot of zero waste, and way more veganism. I think vegan is going to be in 10 years from now, the vegan population is probably going to double.
Wow.
It's definitely trending that way.
Yeah. And what does that mean for you in terms of being able to manage your menus or your ordering? What challenges does that pose?
It's trying to find items that I can still use that will keep the meat eaters happy as well.
Mm.
So, there's definitely a balance there because, you don't want to ostracize one group for the other.
Mm-hmm.
So that's always the challenge.
Yeah. Well, I know that. No, I don't know this because I've never cooked for 1,000 people, so I can't say I know it. But I can only imagine that the challenge of keeping the number of people happy here at Parkside with the food choices, the dining services. Jeffrey Willis, executive chef here at UW Parkside, has been doing that, and we appreciate his efforts, and I appreciate you taking time to be with us on Parkside today.
Sure. Thank you.